got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Eastbound and down. We gonna do what they say can be done. The American people and the people of the world are waking up to the new world order.
Conspiracy theories.
Son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, because we got a run to make. We're not shipping a bunch of beer in an 18-wheeler. We're bringing liberty and freedom and the Constitution.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get ready to rumble!
The place from whence I write is wrong if your third eye is closed. And the blind suppose that I'm evil because the people can't see the furthest from smoking trees. And I hope their needs are met as I step up my writing, but still deal with the walking dead. After all, communication ain't what I thought you heard. Communication is what you thought I said. So where your mind at now? From the time I sat down, you should have known that I was zoning. Homie, I only came to speak truth to power. And my motto is ignore these cowards. I mean, why should I stand up until he man up? Because if I stand up for no reason, I guarantee you it's going to be studio thug hunting season. I place that on everything I believe in. I only want to be understood. And I write like what's hood, but who's the most ghetto is not the point. The point is my integrity. And if I'm profound, why should I dumb it down? Let the A&R give them the runaround. I only came to walk 180. I do this for the art, not to drop Mercedes. I write it for the same reason Coltrane did it. To cipher in a graveyard with a 40-inch cigar and a cat in a gray wave cap be like, yo, Black came with it. And I put out my cigar, put a little drink on the grave. Tell them brothers I call you God, cause calling you begin to be like calling you slave. And you have to understand your concept of God is deeper than that slave master's. I mean, how he gonna have a bastard and put him out on the plantation and call him his property? See, we bigger than this poverty. We can make a project staircase seem more beautiful than any room in the mayor's place. Ask anyone. We even majestic when we walk down the street. Our feet pivot hip-hop beats deep into the pavement. And still wink like, shorty, how your day went? They try to give us short, so all day long we stay bent. I mean, why be broke when you can make sense and pay rent? If you could write like this, your life might switch. But let me slow down. Tell Doodle Burnett Tombstone to throw me another 40 while I sit down at the foot of this tree, relax and relight my This is far above inconvenient truths. The fact is, I'm not afraid to die. And because so many people are afraid to live, that might be the reason why they just getting by. But me, I embrace my demons, and I bring them everywhere I go. And we check into motels and get faded and fight and fall. But I rarely introduce them to anyone I know, because I know that the smell of burning leaves is not provocative. Besides, who wants to see giant brown trees covered in thorny vines that climb like ivy, half visible beyond blue fog, totally masking the image of a man on his knees, screaming, it is me, God, please take me now, because I'm surrounded by people who believe that my words can make them happy, when I don't know a damn thing about joy. But if you ever wish for the pretense to convince this world that your every breath isn't hemorrhaging yearning, then whenever you see me, ask me how.
This is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity.
The 9/11 hijackers are alive and well. That's according to the chief of Japan's Democratic Party, who says 9/11 is a hoax. David Ray Griffin is a professor and author who wrote the book, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. He joins us from Santa Barbara, California. I'm guessing that you think that, and this is just an assumption on my point, on my part, that maybe this parliamentarian from Japan may have a point in determining whether 9/11 was really a hoax or not?
Oh, absolutely. The physical evidence is so strong for the destruction of the World Trade Center by explosives that we're really in the level of proof now, not conjecture. So on that score, I've just written a book on World Trade Center 7. It's called The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Official Story, the Final Official Account of 9/11 is Unscientific and False. And I, in that book, give a massive amount of evidence that's been compiled by scientists, architects, and engineers that all three buildings, although in that book I focus on World Trade Center 7, were brought down by explosives. There's simply no other possibility. And the only way that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which wrote the official report, the only way they were able to deny that was to commit massive scientific fraud.
The politician who I'm talking about in Japan, his name is Yukihisa Fujita, and his claims are that 8 of the 19 hijackers are still alive and well, that this was all created by not necessarily terrorists, but people who are trying to benefit off the stock market. How much of this are you buying? How much of this argument are you buying from Mr. Fujita? Or do you believe that it is kind of an inside job, but for other reasons?
First of all, we have to be careful about this Washington Post editorial. Fujita himself says that they really distorted what he said, so we can't take that too seriously. But that said, certainly let's take the issue of the hijackers, whether there were eight or so. We certainly know that some were still alive after 9/11. Walid al-Shiri, for example, showed up in Morocco and gave a press conference. The BBC reported on it, and they said there's no doubt about the fact that he is the man, because they had published, FBI had sent his paper, his picture around the world, and it was the same man. And then there's his brother. And yet when the 9/11 Commission wrote its account, they said that Walid and Wael al-Shiri were the ones probably on Flight 11 who stabbed the flight attendant. So they just ignored the fact that these two guys were still alive.
Dr. Griffin, real quickly, then the question becomes to you, why? Why would the government kind of cover this up, hide all this information?
What we have here is an extreme example of something that governments, imperialistic governments, have done for a very long time. They're called false flag operations. You attack your own people. You blame another country or another group that you already had reasons to want to attack. Hitler did this when he was ready to attack Poland. That's how World War II got started. Japan did it when they were ready to attack Manchuria. That's how the Asian part of World War II got started. Our government did it in this case, planting evidence that these attacks were carried out by members of Al-Qaeda. But it's interesting that even our FBI says they do not list Osama bin Laden as wanted for 9/11. Now, our news media generally won't tell the people that, but it's the fact, And when one of our people asked the FBI, why don't you list Osama bin Laden as wanted for 9/11, the fellow who was the head of investigative publicity said, because we have no hard evidence that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11.
But we must never forget, those who attacked America on 9/11 are plotting to do so again, are plotting to do so again,
are plotting to do so again.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sure the president is aware that it's against international law to annex occupied land. Why do we keep giving, as Vice President Biden did, ironclad commitments to Israel when it violates international law? And the president says it's our relationship is unshakable. How can that be?
Well, we enjoy a strong and important relationship with the country and the people of Israel.
Even when it violates the law, I mean, go into this whole thing, why should they be get this reprieve?
Well, again, we enjoy a strong relationship with the country and the people. We are committed to their security in a very important and dangerous.
Security?
Well, let me finish my answer, Al. In a very important region of the world, I think the vice president though could not have been clearer on, as I said, and as the vice president said, on both the timing and the substance of the announcement that was made during his trip, that we have asked each side to refrain from the type of announcements that would shake the trust needed to sit down together and make some decisions on moving forward on a peace process. So I think the vice president was extremely clear on his trip there. I know the president looks forward to speaking with the vice president. He'll get back very, very early tomorrow morning. And I anticipate that they'll likely talk either later in the weekend or first thing on Monday about what the vice president saw, not just in Israel but in the region, as we try to move things forward.
Well, we've already seen the violation on the part of one party. What is the U.S. going to do about it?
Well, again, I think the vice president was extremely strong in condemning what the Israeli government announced during his trip.
What about Afghanistan? How long do you think we're going to be there?
Very long time. I just read a book that really disturbed me. It was a book written by Dalton Fury, and he was the lead Delta Force commander at Tora Bora. And The Delta Force realized that there was an escape route along the mountains to Pakistan, and they wanted to send an elite Delta Force on the other side of the mountains to stop bin Laden and them from escaping that way. And it went right into the White House, and George Bush and Dick Cheney vetoed the idea. And that disturbed me. Number one, did they want this guy to escape, so they left him an out? Or number two, what are these two bozos doing making a decision, a combat decision, to an elite Delta Force member or Delta Force commander, when you got Dick Cheney, who got 5 deferments from Vietnam, and you got George Bush, who couldn't even make it to 1 year's National Guard meetings, and these guys are making a command combat decision to the elite Delta Force, and then all you heard from them was, oh, we let our generals call the shots.
To begin with.
Did you agree with us going to Afghanistan?
Initially, I did, because I felt that, they were the people, Al-Qaeda was the people who attacked us, and that we needed to go get these people if they're going to continue to attack us, absolutely. But I did not agree at all with Iraq. I mean, they told us there were these 19 hijackers, Larry. Not one of them was an Iraqi. That would be the equivalent, in my opinion, of when the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. Well, we'll go attack Korea. After all, they're Asian too, aren't they?
Barack Obama, he's in his second year. How's he doing?
Well, he started off good, but I've been very disappointed lately, Larry, because number one, I feel he should have prosecuted for the torture. He let everybody off the hook on that one. I don't like that. I think that we have to be a country that stands by the rule of law even when it's inconvenient. And if I were president, I would be prosecuting right now all the way up the chain of command whoever ordered all this torturing that goes on in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and all those places, because we should not be a country that is known that we torture prisoners and do that type of thing to gain intelligence, because you don't gain from torturing anyway. None of the intelligence is any good. Otherwise, they'd let police do it.
So you're saying torture in and of itself is ineffective?
Totally ineffective, because I've been waterboarded, Larry, so I know what it's like. And all you're doing when you torture someone is they're going to admit to anything to end the torture. That's why it has no credibility to it. Well, I think it's more the polarization of these two political parties, Larry. They're the downfall of our country right now, and our country better start waking up and quit voting for Democrats and Republicans. George Washington, wait a minute, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams all warned us way back when. They said the fall of America would not come externally, it would come from internally when political parties took over the government. And it's clear today that these two political parties, they put their party ahead of the country. because they vote for their party first and the country second. And until this country wakes up and quits electing Democrats and Republicans to office to send that message, well, we're going to get that type of government then.
Well, the government is dealing drugs. What do you mean?
Well, it's a well-known fact that Iran-Contra, that they were running drugs in which to support the Contras down there in Nicaragua and all that stuff. The CIA's been doing it for years, Larry, because, see, if they can get their own source of money, then they can do things without telling Congress about it.
But well, how do you know they're doing it? How do you know that?
Look in my book and you'll see the facts and you'll read about how it led right to Ollie North's desk.
Yeah, we know about Iran-Contra, but you're saying that you're talking about now. You're talking about the youth. You're accusing the Obama administration of hypocrisy. In what regard?
I'm accusing of hypocrisy in the fact that the war on drugs is a failure, a complete failure, and you're not going to win the war on drugs by putting people in prison because they use drugs. Let me put it to you this way, Larry. I grew up in the 60s, in the days of Jimi Hendrix, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, and all that. To put this into the correct context so everyone can understand, marijuana was to rock and roll what beer is to baseball. Now imagine if they took away beer at the ball game. What an outrage there would be. And yet, people that want to smoke pot, they're breaking the law, they can't do it. And I'll tell you this, Larry, I've done both, and I've behaved far worse on alcohol than I ever have from marijuana. Alcohol
is way worse. You would legalize it, then. You would
Absolutely.
Legalize marijuana.
I would legalize it. I hope the state of California, it's on their initiative. 800,000 people have signed to put it on the ballot for total legalization. California can lead the way and legalize marijuana. They say it'll bring $1 billion into the California economy. Don't you think our economy needs that now?
Fire to begin with the gas of the day.
But I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens, whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
And freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order. But we're order out of chaos, but we will.
It's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time. Wait, yeah, wait.
I feel confident the speaker will be able to get those votes. Everybody talks about this extraordinary process. This is a bill that passed the United States Senate with 60 votes. Yeah. 60 votes. To ask a majority of the members of the House to pass it and somehow that be extra judicial or extra legislative, it's just, this has been blown out of proportion. And it will be reconciled. That's, you know, this so-called reconciliation process. Only in Washington does the word reconciliation mean war.
This is a sad case. You know, this is a sad case.
He's now become the darling of the conservative talk radio people. Rush Limbaugh, he's on Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
A Democrat.
So what? I mean, the point is, this is a very sick person. He has been diagnosed with cancer. Perhaps his judgment is impaired because of his the ethical issues that have arisen. And he is no longer in the Congress. Poor baby. Sometimes we really exaggerate our own importance.
Viewers, a note, as we were going to a commercial break yesterday around this time, we had a graphic on the screen that said Department of Jihad, followed by a question mark. Many of you tweeted me that you found that graphic to be offensive. I agree. It was. The graphic referenced a video produced by Liz Cheney's organization, Keep America Safe. Their video features those words on screen, questioning the loyalty of Justice Department attorneys who had previously worked on behalf of Guantanamo detainees. CNN had no intention of suggesting that the Justice Department supports terrorism. Lawyers at the Justice Department are patriotic Americans, and we certainly regret any confusion that may have been caused by our graphic.
You know what, Kirsten? I look at this absolutely insane idea that the House is going to vote on a rule, and the rule will say that the House, in fact, voted on the Senate bill when they didn't vote on the Senate bill, so they can backdoor sneak this, ram it down our throat, ignore all history, ignore all tradition, undermine the traditions. They're doing it because they can't pass the bill. So they're bribing senators on the one hand, then they're using tactics that they condemned on the other hand, and then beyond anything we've ever seen. You're a Democrat. Do you condemn this?
No.
No,
It's not a radical thing to be using reconciliation, first of all. Reconciliation has been used for lots of things that are not straight budget things, no matter what Republicans
try to say. Stop. We're not talking about reconciliation. What they're doing, this, you've got to be clear here. They are going to have House members vote on a rule change to say they passed the Senate bill that they never passed, so then they'll have the cover to say, well, I voted for the rule change, but I didn't vote for the Senate bill. You're telling me you're comfortable with that?
I'm telling you, I'm comfortable with what I understand is going to happen, which is that they will vote for the Senate bill, and then in reconciliation, there will be changes
made.
They're
not voting for the Senate bill.
And the things that you complain about are the types of things that are going to be taken out in reconciliation. The Cornhusker kickback and all these things that you don't like, and I don't like either.
Just from a pure economic standpoint, do you think we should be remaking 16% of GDP, a big part of the economy, on reconciliation? I mean, it sounds absurd.
I'm just curious, was this a concern of yours when we went to war in Iraq?
You're going to love this country, a land of freedom and opportunity, and air conditioning. Huh? You like that? That's the cool breeze of freedom right there.
The world has a double. The world is not entirely or completely what it seems to be. Culture, and by culture I mean any culture, anywhere, anytime, gives you the message that everything is humdrum, everything is normal. In other words, culture denies experience. You know, we all have had prophetic dreams, intimations, unlikely strings of coincidences, all of these sort of things. These are experiences which cultures deny. Cultures put in place, I'm sure you've heard this word, a paradigm. And then what fits within the cultural paradigm is accentuated, stressed, and what doesn't fit inside the cultural paradigm is denied, marginalized, argued against. And we live at the end of a thousand-year binge on the philosophical position known as materialism. For approximately 500 years, the great era of the triumph of modern science, materialism has had the field all to itself, and its argument for its preeminence was the beautiful toys that it could create: aircraft, railroads, global economies, television, spacecraft. But that is a fool's argument for truth. That's, after all, how a medicine show operates, you know. The juggler is so good, the medicine must be even better. This is not an entirely rational way to proceed. And now, at the end of 500 years of the practice of rational, quote-unquote, scientific culture, we're literally at the end of our rope. Reason and science and the practice of unbridled capitalism have not delivered us into an angelic realm. Quite the contrary, they've delivered 3% of us into an angelic realm, completely overshadowed by guilt about what's happening to the other 97% of us who are eating it. It's not a pretty picture, modern civilization. Most people in the world today are quite miserable, actually. They have very little hope. their religions, their traditional value systems are being eroded by Dallas and Hawaii 5-0, which are on the village television every night. Lifespans are being shortened by pesticides, chemicals, all kinds of things in the environment. And there is very little political light on the horizon. So I believe that it's reasonable, looking at this situation, to say that history failed and that the grand dream of Western civilization has in fact failed. And now we are attempting, with basically a carved wooden oar, to turn a battleship around. And it's a very frustrating undertaking. The momentum for catastrophe is enormous in this situation. But it's not 100% certain that catastrophe is what we're headed for, because we are not 100% unconscious. There are people struggling to figure out how to control population, struggling to figure out how to balance the relationship between the masculine and the feminine, struggling to bring amelioration of hunger and disease to various parts of the world. So we're in essentially a tragic situation. A tragic situation is a catastrophe when you know it. People feed at the trough of government grants and enormous corporate research budgets, and the idea of actually pursuing truth or attempting to understand a phenomenon in an unbiased fashion, divorced from its commercial, social, and political dimensions, is unheard of. And boundary dissolution is the most threatening activity that can go on in a society. Government institutions become very nervous when people begin to talk to each other. The whole name of the Western game is to create boundaries and maintain them. The church and the state, the poor and the wealthy, the black and the white, the male and the female, the young and the old, the gay and the straight, the living and the dead, the foreign and the familiar, all of these categorical divisions allow a kind of thinking that is completely cockamamie. After all, reality is in fact a seamless, unspeakable something. And we understand that to perceive it separately is a necessary adjunct to the act of understanding, but it is not the end of the program of understanding. The particulate data has to be recombined in a paradigm, a seamless overview of what is happening. So there's a lot of tension in society between the great exploring soul and the assembly line citizen. The citizen is defined by obligation and by the boundaries that define, you know, the next citizen, either because it's neighbor or worker or employer or something like that. And the grand exploring soul is marginalized as an eccentric, or if necessary, more seriously marginalized as mad in some way. I mean, madness basically, up until the level of physical violence, means you are behaving in a way which makes me feel uncomfortable. Therefore, there's something wrong with you.
Pedagogical system in this country is totally, totally ineffective. And you can look at that from everything from Jonathan Colzo's work in Savage Inequalities, which documents it across the nation. So when is America going to wake up? And as you said, value education, which does not mean you take a test well. It means you can think independently. You know what you think. You know why you think it. And you can read and write, and you can hold your own. And you don't have to agree with each other, but you have thoughts that are yours, and you can question. Oh, the problem with that is you question authority. You question everything that comes your way. And that doesn't seem to fit too well with the New World Order.
No, it sure doesn't.
That's my 5 cents.
Hey, well, you take care and have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ben.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
A New York police officer tonight breaking the infamous blue wall of silence and speaking out about something the NYPD has always denied. Cops have quotas for arrests and for tickets. And the officer says the pressure to make quotas means the arrest of innocent people. Investigative reporter Jim Hoffer is here with his exclusive. Jim?
Bill and Liz, a five-year veteran of the NYPD, says his conscience could no longer allow him to remain silent. He claims that the 41st Precinct in the Bronx, it's all about numbers, number of arrests and summonses, often of young minorities who have done nothing wrong.
When Officer Adil Polanco dreamed of becoming a cop, it was out of a desire to help people, not, he says, to harass them.
I'm not going to keep arresting innocent people. I'm not going to keep searching people for no reason. I'm not going to keep writing people for no reason. I'm tired of this.
Officer Polanco says One Police Plaza's obsession with keeping crime stats down has gotten out of control. He claims precinct commanders relentlessly pressure cops on the street to make more arrests, give out more summonses, all to show headquarters they have a tight grip on their neighborhoods.
You're telling me that they're just stopping people without a reason? Is that what you're saying?
We're stopping kids walking from school. We're stopping kids walking upstairs to their house. We're stopping kids from going to the store. Kids, young adults.
In order to keep your activity.
In order to keep that quota.
One Police Plaza declined our request for interviews, but Deputy Commissioner Paul Brown said police officers, like others who receive compensation, are provided productivity goals, and they are expected to work.
The consequences will be very strong.
Consequences that he says includes loss of overtime, shift change, and denial of days off if an officer fails to make his numbers. An intense pressure that Officer Polanco says leads to bogus summonses.
I cannot be more honest than I've been. I cannot. There's no reason for me to lie. There's no reason for me to get into trouble I am, because I just could have kept quiet.
About a month after Officer Polanco came to us with his story, he was suspended.